not because of the example of the book particularly, but I wanted to talk today about generosity. It's been on my mind a fair amount the last couple of weeks. And as I kind of have been trying in my own life to understand what generosity is and how to be generous in various situations where I don't automatically feel generous. So I look at the teachings of generosity as a kind of mirror to help me and look at myself and what's going on within me when I don't feel generous. And some of it, you know, some of it is around parenting. How do I be a generous parent? Or how do I be a generous spouse now that I'm a parent? I used to be able to be a generous spouse easily before. But, you know, the baby falls, doesn't know how to fall asleep by himself. And at night, he gets kind of manic as he gets tired. And he doesn't want to stop. He doesn't want to be put down to sleep. He doesn't want anything except getting more and more manic. And so the only thing to do is to hold him so he goes asleep in your arms. But he hates it, so he cries and he squirms and he's, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, Idi Amin. So this process goes on, you know, most evenings. And so so there's two parents to do this. You know, it only takes one to do it, right? Because there's two of us who could do it. And what's the generous thing to do? Who should do it? So I'm interested in what makes us generous and what makes us ungenerous. And that's kind of the topic. I'll hopefully just say a few words, but I thought that'd be an interesting topic for us to discuss a little bit. What makes us generous and what makes us ungenerous? And in thinking about this, I was thinking that some woman was stranded up by our house, up on Skyline, a few nights ago. And she came. We were driving home, and we were the car that she flagged down. And she asked if we had a cell phone, and I said, no, but. We live right across the street because it happened to be she stopped us right in front of our driveway. So she came over, and it was very easy to be generous, you know, and invite her in. And she'd been cold, standing in the cold for half an hour, and made tea for her and offered her various things, offered her to stay as long as she needed to take care of whatever she needed to take care of. And it was kind of unremarkable act of generosity. I didn't think about what I was doing. I just kind of, you know, of course, someone like that, you help out. But then I reflected, you know, what was it about that event that allowed me to be generous? And then I reflected about, you know, what it's like when I go backpacking and going up into the Sierras. And there's a way in which a lot of the concerns of living in a life that we kind of live down here and begins to fall away. Concerns about work and concerns about relationships and concerns about finances or concerns about whatever. And after a few days, perhaps up in the Sierras backpacking, it's just you and the sky and the trees, and you're very present and life is very simple. The mind is very simple, and no longer I'm not so concerned about some of the things that I'm very preoccupied perhaps with down below, down here. You know, if my hair looks a little bit unkempt, you know, who cares? You run into someone on the trail, and you know, it's fine. You know, I don't give any concern about it. Whereas down here, maybe I'm concerned about such things, or you know, I'm shaving properly, or looking my best, or you know, and then I can get all caught up, you know, and looking myself in the mirror and you know, doing what I do, and maybe. But you know, things become a lot simpler after a few days up in the Sierras, and the normal concerns about who I am and how I have to present myself to people and how I look, and you know, kind of falls away. And when I meet people on the trail, I think a lot of people who go backpacking have the experience that there's actually a lot of friendship, easy friendliness, and generosity that happens with people who run into each other up on the trails. And, you know, you walk down University Avenue, and, you know, you don't kind of, you're not happy to see the, you know, the person who walks towards you. You're not so happy to see them that you kind of say, well, where have you been and where are you going? And, you know, it's like, these people are in my way. And there's a kind of an easy friendliness that often happens in that kind of context. And also kind of easy generosity in that kind of context also. You know, people are often sharing each other's, you know, food or their drinks or whatever. And then we come back from the Sierras and we come back to our life. And what many of us find who do this kind of experience is that with time, that friendliness and generosity of spirit, simplicity of spirit, begins to fade somewhat. And somehow something happens as we come back to this normal life. We get caught up with our concerns about our self-image, our identity, the things that have to be done, the things we have to be accomplished, the things we have to acquire. I'm very much struck in the years that since I've left living kind of a monastic life by the tremendous allure and power of suggestion and power of seemingly kind of peer pressure and what everybody else is doing around you and all that to acquire and get things, to certain kinds of houses and cars and whatever people get. It's almost as if by osmosis, I find myself wanting more things that I don't need because I see all the people around me having these things. And it's kind of curious to watch these desires inside of me being born. I never used to have them. I used to be quite happy without them. So we come back from the Sierras, and we come back, and we can sometimes watch all these forces beginning to take up their rightful place in our minds again. And the mind gets very busy with things that have to be done, accomplished, and defended from, or explained, or whatever. And as that happens, I think often there's less room for generosity, because the generosity that resides inside of us, not necessarily how we act, but how we feel, I think is very much conditioned, or very much flowers when there's some kind of simplicity of presence, simplicity of mind. And when we lose that simplicity, then we lose the much of our impetus or tendency to be generous. And then what's even more kind of frightening, more kind of painful, is the way in which we come back from the Sierras and we get swept up in the normal concerns of our society and all the shoulds and shouldn'ts and acquisitions and jobs and works and many things we have to do because the society kind of requires us perhaps to do some of these things. But we get busier and busier. The mind gets busier and busier. And one of the consequences of that, when we much of our day is inhabiting our mind, our thoughts, it's all too easy to become strangers to ourselves and actually become alienated from ourselves. And I see it in myself pretty regularly. I come down to when I sit down to sit, especially at the end of the day, part of the process of sitting for me is to overcome the alienation that I've had. I've been running around doing things all day, talking to people, thinking whatever I'm thinking. And I get a certain momentum that keeps me out of myself, keeps me into the thoughts and ideas. And part of the process of sitting at the end of the day is somehow settling all that and getting in touch with myself again. Or I describe it as catching up to myself. And you feel it in the body. You feel all these sensations in the body, the tension or whatever. So we become strangers to ourselves, and it's actually painful to be strangers to ourselves, to be alienated from ourselves. There's a kind of feeling of discontent that often arises. Sometimes it can be even a little bit subconscious, the discontent. And this discontent then fuels a desire to fill it with something that would make us content, to compensate for it, or to solve it, or fix it, or do something with it. And if we've already got too lost in the world of our thoughts and our busyness, then the attempts to kind of compensate for that feeling of malcontent often takes the form of increased busyness and increased thoughts and ideas and planning. And it can actually sometimes be a tremendous spiral of we begin to be alienated from ourselves. It's painful, and so we continue the very behavior which makes more alienation, more separation from ourselves, more becoming numb to ourselves or not knowing where we are. This makes sense to some of you, this process? And so we become less and less generous, generous in spirit, generous, you know, in heart. The mind becomes speedy, constricted. The mind becomes crowded with thoughts. Traveling is like going to the Sierras. Sometimes people are traveling. In the old days, they used to go on pilgrimages. I think traveling also brings out, and more tends to often bring out, a kind of simplicity, and with that, a kind of generosity. Remember when I was 17, I was traveling through Europe with four 17, 18-year-old friends who were... we had this little Volkswagen bus, and it was kind of like a hippie commune on wheels for part of the summer. And it was great. You know, the five of us shared everything. We had hardly any money at all for our trip. And we were driving to Yugoslavia and into Greece and back up again. One of the people I was traveling with actually had some money, but he was saving it because he was going to do this big drug deal. And so we were driving around looking for some place to help him buy marijuana. Think of the French connection. And quite luckily, you know, we didn't know what we were whatever. And we didn't come across anything. But we had some pretty great adventures in the process. But we didn't have any money except for the money he had reserved for the buy. So we shared everything, and we were eating. We basically ate bread and evaporated milk. But we shared everything we had. You know, everything we just kind of. You know, it was a lovely time, at this little commune on wheels. And then I was 17, so I came back at the end of the summer to go to high school, senior year in high school in Los Angeles. And I came back with this wonderful spirit of just generosity, and we share whatever we have, you know. And I remember a day or two after coming back, I was with some friends, and we were hungry. So it was, you know, it made sense to go to a restaurant or get some food. And my friend said, "Oh, I don't have really much money here. I only have, you know, a dollar or two." And I said, "Oh, that's okay, because I have $10. And he looked at me kind of like I was from Mars. You know, what are you talking about? The idea that I would, that we would share my money, that my money was as much his, and we would go out and just kind of, you know, get our food, was really foreign to him. And it wasn't possible, actually, to do it that way. And I was kind of then shocked by the huge disparity or this difference between the generosity of us traveling in Europe and the lack of kind of understanding of generosity and my friend in Los Angeles. I remember being in Thailand for my first meditation retreat in Thailand, and I was given this little kuti, this little cabin, little hut on stilts over a swamp where you did your meditation. And it was like a little 8x12 little room with a little porch, and there was steps going down into the kind of the boards, the planks that went on top of the wetlands or whatever in the monastery. And I was there for 10 weeks, and at some point and the monks every morning went out on their alms round to collect their food, but I wasn't a monk, so I just sat and meditated. And at the end of one morning meditation, I opened my door, a little cabin, and looked out on the porch. And there, at the top of the steps, someone had laid out some apples and cookies. And then I looked up beyond that, and I saw walking away, maybe 100 feet away, down these planks, was the monk who had put them there. But what struck me was that he had no idea that I was going to open the door at that moment to see who it was that left the cookies there. And it struck me very deeply that someone would do something so generously as leave cookies and apples. It's a big deal in a meditation monastery. And not care to get any recognition for it. That struck me as that was new to me, kind of this idea. And it made me think about the inner intention, the inner generosity of what it is. There are certainly outer forms of generosity. We can do a lot of things. But I think what's really important, especially for people who do meditation, is not necessarily the external manifestation of generosity, but rather is tapping into or discovering, appreciating the inner intention or the inner manifestation of generosity inside of us. A kind of generosity doesn't necessarily need anything in return, doesn't need recognition in return. And what are some of the inner manifestations of generosity? What are some of the forms? What happens in our mind and our hearts when generosity is present, when generous spirit is there? What is it that happens? What are some of the inner spirits, inner forces of the mind that have to be present for generosity, inner generosity, to be there? What is it that helps us become more generous? That's the question. And so I ask you, what has helped you in your life to strengthen or increase? What is it that helps make you more generous? Remembering that it's not generosity is an inner spirit rather than necessarily what you actually do. What have you found that helps make you more generous? And what is it that makes you ungenerous? Yes.
In the last probably 4 months, I've decided to clear out a lot more space in my life, and that's helped me be so generous. And recently, I talked with a friend who has been on prednisone for many years because of the asthma problems, and she's pretty much bedridden. She doesn't really have a spine anymore to stand up with. And she didn't even have a tape layer anymore. And I had this beautiful tape layer in my garage I hadn't used hardly at all, ever. And I sent it to her this week, and I just felt so happy. I was just high all day, knowing that she could use something that was superfluous for me. And so my making more space and becoming more and more simple in my own life has created all this stuff that somebody else can be using.
Great. Thank you. Yes?
For me, generosity is the balance between emptiness and fullness. When I am full inside, then generosity is no more effort than a flower and fragrance. And all the things that make me empty inside, a sense of being worn down, a sense of my needs not met, those are the times when I'm stingy.
Beautiful, thank you. Yes, Terry.
I've had the thought oftentimes the remembrance of how terrible it feels to feel like I can't give something to someone, like on the street they're asking for something, and there's a little moment whether I can either open up to it or I can pull away from it, and that feeling of pulling away is not something that I want to cultivate.
Mm. Because it's painful.
It feels bad at all. And I thought, I can't control whether I'm rich or poor, really, but I can control whether I'm stingy or not.
Whether you constrict or not. Whether you, Thank you. So what makes you more generous is the recognition of the pain of being constricted, pulling back. Thank you. Yes?
One thing that's struck me just now is what it means to be generous. I wonder if giving away something that you don't really want anyway, whether that really constitutes an act of generosity.
made me feel really good.
It was an interesting question. Most of us don't need most of the stuff we have as it is. Yes?
Well, I think it was an act of generosity. It takes a lot of thought and effort to actually do that. The easiest thing would have been to just call up goodwill and give it away.
Or the trash can.
Yeah, even easier.
Yeah. So part of generosity involves not just simply the goods that are given, if it's goods, but it's the energy and the effort and the thought and that goes into... And sometimes that's really most significant. I know sometimes I've received things, and it's the effort the person seems to be to have made. It counts much more for me than actually what I'm given. Yeah.
For me, it has something to do with boundaries. It depends on how separate I feel. The more separate I feel, the more tight, and I hold on to things. When I'm feeling generous, I'm also feeling less bounded, so that there doesn't seem to be much difference to helping somebody else. It's like just part of the world, I mean, part of me.
So this has been a theme now a couple of times, is that when we're full or most ourselves, that generosity isn't even an act that we do. It just seems to just flow naturally, as if, you know. Yes.
The word that came to mind first when you started talking, and it kind of relates, was empathy, and that to the extent that, you know, I really feel there, but for the grace of God, or I've been there, it becomes much more compelling, I guess.
So generosity is the motivation for generosity. It can be born from feeling empathy or feeling the other person's situation and wanting to respond to it or help. Good. Yes.
When I'm focused on someone else and my attention is on them, that naturally brings on my generosity, instead of like focusing on what I need.
Thank you. Good. Yes?
When I take time to be in nature, mm-hmm. and allow myself to be as big as the space around me, and just to enjoy the everything about it, the animals and the air and the sun and everything, fills me so much that I have so much more to give when I'm taking care of myself that way.
Yes, Yvonne.
I think what I'm thinking about generosity is connection with forgiving. And that's a difficult point for me. Right now there is a person that I have very hard time forgiving things that were done to me without reason by this person. I mean, many years ago, but I have difficulty forgiving. I think there is a connection.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I've been lobbied a few times last few weeks to give a talk on forgiveness, and it was either forgiveness or generosity tonight. and the nice thing is that in a number of languages, the word for forgiveness has the word "give" in it. In French, also, you know, pardon, you know, has the word "give" in it. So there's something about about forgiveness that also is generous, because forgiveness is not not excusing someone for something. It's not. Glossing over something, or it's not going on, you know, as if it never happened or something. I think forgiveness is actually there's actually a generosity of spirit, a kind of willingness to open up again to another person, which is a generous act, which is part of forgiveness. Yes.
I was thinking that generosity has this real generosity, not the kind of drive, not generosity that's more
power or dominance or self-satisfaction. There's this aspect of gratitude where somebody receives gracefully as well from you and allows you to, you know, give.
So being a graceful receiver, yeah.
As everyone, many people have said, with giving comes from a sense of fullness often, and so when I'm giving, I feel really good, and in a sense receive a lot. When I'm feeling tight and stingy and not giving, I'm not getting. So it kind of is the same thing, because to give means I feel full and in a loving state, and so giving can be kind of selfish.
So then the question is, now the question is, what is the connection between a mindfulness practice and generosity?
Your intention.
Say,
when we've been talking about generosity in the beginning here, people have very good intentions, but sometimes people don't
beautiful. So this is the inner quality. This is why I'm focusing a little bit on the inner quality, inner manifestation of generosity, because the external manifestation of generosity, actually giving someone to something or doing something externally for someone, can be motivated from many different internal intentions, and it's the inner intention to be generous which I'm trying to focus on here today. So you pointed to that nicely. It's the intention behind it, and it's all too easy to be generous out of fear or out of to be generous out of ambition. Or it's also possible to be generous out of being a spiritual idealist, which is very dangerous. Because now we've talked about generosity, and you know, a spiritual person's really generous, so I better, you know, be generous so people see that I'm a spiritual person, or there's suddenly there's a should, you know, if I was really doing this right, if I was really doing this human thing right, then I'd be really generous. So we have to be very careful very careful about the ideals and idealism, because it's just another way of alienating yourself from yourself. Yeah, Nancy.
But I think something can be said about really stretching sometimes when you're being generous. I've had the experience, it was quite experimental, where I really stretched unbelievably for a charity, for donation. And I felt good about it. And then another time I did it again, and I was questioned by the person, well, as a donor like this, we want to put your name on the program, and we want to do all this advertising. And I'm saying, can't I just do this anonymously? And they were trying to talk me out of that. They want that recognition out there. That really surprised me. But just stretching like that is a wonderful experience.
There's in Buddhist practice, there's kind of maybe two kinds of generosity. One is the kind that some of you mentioned here, which is just kind of the spontaneous acts of generosity, which is there's no thought really to it. Just it's the right thing to do. It just kind of happens easily. The other form of generosity is generosity as a practice, not as a should, not as an ideal thing to kind of pretend we're generous when we're not really, but rather to take it on as a practice to help understand ourselves better, to go about life and look for opportunities to be generous, practice generosity, and have that become a mirror to see, oh, actually, I don't really want to give in this situation. Or notice where you're constricted or where you're afraid or where all these different kind of reactions come up. So the practice, generosity as a practice, a spiritual practice, is designed, as I keep saying, to be a mirror for us to understand ourselves better. So stretching is one way maybe of talking about this. We stretch ourselves not necessarily for the sake of generosity, we stretch ourselves for the sake of becoming more familiar with how we actually tick, how we actually work. One of the interesting exercises to do is to take a $20 bill and put it in your pocket and say, okay, this week I'm going to give this $20 bill to someone I don't know. And walk around and, you know, looking for that opportunity. Who do you want to give it to that you don't know? And you'll learn a lot about yourself in the process. Yes?
How would you do it? Who would you give it to?
I don't know.
There's so many chances for error.
So many chances for error.
Suppose you. I once was very happy with a tour of a museum in Europe, and I said, "Gee, I don't know. You know, could I offer you something?" And she seemed to be so, you know, almost hurt and hit, as if I had insulted her deeply.
Oh, I see.
And she said, "No. Why don't you put it in that charity box over there?" Obviously, she was a woman who was donating her time from a, you know, upper class background and something. And I made a big mistake offering her a little bit of generosity.
Yeah. It's possible in my life I've made a few mistakes being generous. I know that I've made a ton more mistakes being ungenerous.
I worry too much about this, but there's another thing. Somehow or other I've had to make some decisions about giving money to someone where I knew pretty well that the money was going to be spent for substance abuse. And it really hurt to say no all the time. So I don't feel generous in that regard. And I think I'm doing the right thing.
It might be generous in a different way.
Yeah, but it's a generosity which doesn't immediately make you feel good. It makes you feel bad.
So that's why the $20 per week, you know, you kind of... All these things come up, all these issues come up, and you're not supposed to be, you know, do it casually. You're supposed to think about it and reflect on it and do it as wisely as you can. But who do you give it to? You know, it's... Yes?
What strikes me is that, just as I used to, we focus very much when we hear the word generosity on stuff, either money or things. And I remember Ajahn Sanasaro. He gave a day-long teaching, and he talked about a variety of different generosities, generosity of time and of patience, and I forget the whole list.
Yes.
But it really struck me because I have the same problem. I always think it has to be stuff.
What's your name?
My name is Renata.
Renata, thank you. Because, I'm sorry, but Tenisero gave me a cup to give to someone in the group here, but I've had it at home, you know, it's sitting in a little package at home, and I don't want to use it because it's meant for, I think Sabrina was the person. And I'll check, maybe it was you. No? Yes.
I don't know, maybe this is a little off subject, but I know for myself and for a lot of other people I've talked to, that being generous comes fairly easily, but being on the recipient end of it is very difficult. I like being generous, you know, but I'm very, very uncomfortable when people do things for me.
And
not always very gracious.
And there are times when by not being gracious receivers, we actually stifle the generosity of someone else. We don't give them the opportunity. Yes.
I have a very difficult time receiving generosity, and in most cases it's probably very subtle and subliminal, you know, when it's friends and something like that. But I think it has to do with trust. And the extreme case is that some stranger walked up to me and offered me $20. The extreme case, I wouldn't trust him. I would think that there's something wrong. I went down, but then, you know, that's the extreme. But you making gradations is always an element of trust, distrust, generosity. I generally feel uncomfortable accepting
Trust, because what are you afraid is going to happen if you receive it?
I don't know. It's not something that's necessarily, you know, conscious of. I'm actually thinking about, you know, scenarios or ulterior motives, you know, that I imagine or fantasize about regarding someone. But there's just this lack of comfort that I have. Mm-hmm. Maybe it comes from life experiences where generosity had something expected in return. So sometimes
people are generous with the expectation of something in return, some obligation, and then we feel uncomfortable. And we know the difference between receiving something where it's really freely given versus receiving something which there's a little tinge of, you know, I want you, you know, next time I want you to, whatever. Yeah. Yes, Ben.
I think there's an element here of suffering and being able to really look at another person's suffering and see what they really need and not just sort of like running around with a hammer, you know, hitting a hammer against everything. Perhaps not the right tool.
So empathy again, or being open and mindful and sensitive enough to really understand the other person. And I think that's also to see someone else's suffering and need, to see it deeply enough and feel it deeply enough, I think it's often a source of very easy generosity because we want to respond, help. Yeah.
I think that, you know, I've had also some conflict with receiving, and initially it seems to me, I often felt that a lot of times when people are giving, they're giving like with pity. And that felt... And that's sort of like the issue of trust, you know. It's like, well, you know, they're giving me this compliment because they feel sorry for me, you know, and they want me to feel better. But, you know, they're just kind of a little twist there. And also a lot of, you know, financial giving is often given out of pity, and in a way that's kind of feels there's a, you know, unequal power.
I remember I gave a drunk in Portland came up to me once and asked me for money. And I said, okay, I'll give you some money, but only if you don't use it to buy alcohol. And he stood up really tall and looked at me indignantly and said, I'll do whatever I want with my money. So I gave it to him anyway. And then the thing about trust, in Palo Alto, just a year or two ago, some guy came up to me, and I think I've told the story, and said, I'm trying to get enough money to buy my dinner. So, you know, can you give me a quarter? So, and I said, well, I'll buy your dinner for you. And he looked at me and he said, oh, I trust you. And I was taken aback. What does trust have to do with it? It was like he was a generous person. I trust you. So then I took him to McDonald's, right where we were, or whatever, and Burger King or something, and he ordered a hamburger, and I said, that's all you want? I'm buying you dinner. Order something more. That's enough. So, yes.
Giving or not giving, or receiving or not receiving, has too much to do with resistance, mm-hmm. resistance to life.
Yeah.
I've been thinking a lot about, and in my practice too, about opening to life, whether it's good things or bad things or not, and how much, and I wondered whether giving and receiving was perhaps a key to opening more. Just wherever you feel resistance, there at that point, whether it's giving up something or having something done your way, you know, you feel that element of resistance, you know, I really want it this way, to just giving then, at that very moment. And it happened with receiving too. Receiving can be very uncomfortable, as resistant to receiving and not able to measure of receiving. And so I was thinking that the more one can open, the more one can receive and give.
And one of the ways to do this in a healthy way in practice and in mindfulness, and one of the ways in which mindfulness practice, one of the purposes, Buddhist purposes of mindfulness practice, is to make us sensitive and interested in resistance, and kind of to be able to notice it, you know, when it's there, even the small, you know, slightest hints of it, and then to spend careful time investigating and getting to know it better. And in the process of getting to know better, having wisdom arise and openness arise from understanding it, as opposed to being in a rush to be open. And we have to be a little bit careful of rushing into some ideal like openness or generosity. The preference is to understand ourselves better, and through understanding, coming to those states. Now, a couple of words to kind of finish up here. In the teachings of the Buddha, he would usually teach and instruct people in the practice of generosity as their first spiritual practice. And people would do practice generosity first before they would do meditation practice. And then with that as a foundation, then they would practice living an ethical life, a life that doesn't harm other people. And then once that's kind of taken care of, those two areas of life, the practice of generosity, the practice of ethics, then the person's introduced to meditation practice. And it's often been said in Buddhism, so in a sense, and traditionally, generosity is the entryway to spiritual practice. And many of the qualities, that we inner qualities that get developed through the act of generosity, the openness, the simplicity of mind, the empathy, the sensitivity to others, the recognition of where we're constricted and where we have resistance. All that that comes with doing generosity lays a very, very important foundation for the deeper work that happens with mindfulness. Or maybe it's said a little bit differently. Perhaps you don't need to do mindfulness if you're thorough enough in the practice of generosity. It's said sometimes that everything you need to develop through spiritual life can be developed through the practice of generosity. It's very, very powerful. And it's often said in our tradition that generosity is a phenomenal support for mindfulness practice, and mindfulness practice is a support for generosity. That the mindfulness itself leads to the qualities of openness, of sensitivity, of receptivity, of non-resistance, and those are the very qualities, inner qualities, that have to be there for us to be generous also. So take $20 and see how you spend it this next week. You give it to, and see what happens if you do that. And think of generosity both as something that comes out naturally when certain inner qualities are there, and think of generosity also as a practice that you can play with and experiment with and see if it's interesting as a practice. Yes, Dick.
The practice of metta, does that fit into that scheme somewhere along the meditation, as a meditation?
Yeah.
Part of meditation.
Yes, but when you get into the world of meditation, then metta fits into it.
Thank you.
So, it would be a generous thing to let you go home now.